Hello, I'm Paul Briley, and you're listening to Off the Comma. I'm a human who cares about supporting other humans. On this podcast, we explore all facets of what it means to feel stuck in life. We talk with people just like us who found themselves sitting on a comma and not knowing where to go next. We'll unpack the experience with them, where they've been stuck, what it feels like, what they experienced, and what they learned. My goal is to inspire you by seeing yourself in others. I believe that when we feel more connected and seen, magic can happen. And remember, if you find yourself sitting on a comma in your life, you can also talk to me without a microphone. To explore coaching with me and getting off the comma in your own life, check out my information and book a call with me at offthecomma.com. And I'm also doing something different. I'm curating my own sponsor community, local businesses and professionals who I handpick and who align with our vision here. Be sure to check them out, learn more about them on my website and my YouTube channel. In the meantime, let's get into this week's conversation. And we are back for another exciting episode of Off the Comma and another amazing story told by people like ourselves, full of experience and vulnerability and also inherent wisdom as well. So I'm looking forward to bringing this week's story to life, or rather helping our guest bring his story to life. And also, I'm particularly excited about this week because not only do I get to meet someone new, and Richard and I haven't really met before, we're going to get to know each other through the telling of his story today. I'm excited about that. But also, because I really, as this podcast continues to grow, I want this podcast to represent voices around the world. And while Richard is here speaking with us in English, he's actually coming from another country, which always makes me very excited. So I'll let him tell you about that. But let's jump in. I'll quit rambling. We're talking this week with Richard Blank. And Richard, I'm going to hand it over to you. But before we get into your story, let's do introductions. And I'd love it if you could start by telling us, how would you like to be known? And then what would you like us to know about you?
Well, first of all, I can't thank you enough. About me, I'm a very proud guest of the Off the Comma podcast. Besides that, how do you describe myself? Well, empathetic, confident, and old school grit. Plus, I'm the largest collector of antique pinball machines in Costa Rica. So I'm extremely proud of my retro game.
Well, Costa Rica, so you gave that away finally, and which I wasn't, and our guests can't see you, but I get to see two of these pinball machines behind you. We're sitting here talking on Zoom, so yeah. I'm getting to see just a slight glimpse into your collection.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, behind me is not a pinball machine. This is a 1961 Ricola Regis, because I also collect jukeboxes, and on the left side is a private candy stash.
Oh, okay. Well, my bad. I stand corrected, but they're beautiful pieces of machinery. So a jukebox and a candy machine.
You know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. Paul and I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and arcades are going out of business, and people just don't want to collect 45s anymore. And so, you know, I'll grab some cash and a couple buddies in a truck. I'll drive 4 hours to some guy's bodega to pick up classic pinball machines for a fraction of the cost. And, I tell you what, if you really know what you love, truly, and it brings you joy, by all means, I think you should do it. As long as it doesn't hurt anybody else and you're responsible, you should fulfill your passions. And for me, mine was, you know, these retro games from the 70s and 80s. As a child, $5 had to last a weekend. Pinball was way out of reach. It was too complicated. Money went too fast. And so, for me, it's a great balancing. Sunday pinball marathons are fun. It gives me a chance to bond with the agents from different departments, let them let off steam and meet people. And I always believe that a gamification culture is the greatest thing you could do in a work environment. In addition to that, recess was the best class. It's where you made all your friends. Paul, you know that. And I am able to reduce an attrition rate in any sort of vertical, any sort of industry, when you have a really nice game room or a neutral environment where people can meet each other and have fun and get off of that phone, smoke less cigarettes, and it's less isolation. It's really these sort of soft skills that people feel that they don't need to do because they're in a work environment. I say quite the contrary. You spend more time at work than you do with your own family. So you might as well make it the best that you can.
Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely hearing, you know, obviously these elements of, and by all means, correct me where I misstate, because I do a lot of reflecting, but I'm definitely hearing, you know, sure, this importance of connection and relationships, and also sort of this, the theme of nostalgia, fun, and kind of good times, it seems like.
I just want to be happy, and I don't want you to quit. Mm-hmm. And if I try to compare myself to the titans here, Amazon, HP, Intel, and Oracle, they're going to crush me. Mm-hmm. It's like a senior football player going against me. You got to be kidding. Mm-hmm. But what can I do? I can be extremely selective, those that come into the center. And as I say, when they see this environment, it maybe sheds some light and breaks some barriers. Instead of being a non-approachable CEO or someone that never talks to them and is intimidating, they see me as someone that's very inviting. Mm-hmm. And I've had people tell me that the reason that they stayed was how they feel, not what the words that I say to them. And so, but yes, my friend, I mean, I have the leverage and the luxury to do whatever I'd like to do in this environment. And I know that some people like to have very uncomfortable furniture, bad lighting, and they think that fear is what gets people motivated. I can make arguments for all of those because I've been in those cubicles. I've made those phone calls. I've had long days. And I do know that if you give someone the proper nurture, you'll get the best out of them. You might even crack some codes. You might be the coach that they never had, the teacher that didn't inspire them, or even the best friends that called the balls and the strikes. So if I can do all of those things, I might be able to make somebody more self-confident, self-reliant, and get them to master this level so they can go on to other levels. And it's just paying it forward, my friend. I realize some of the best advice I got along my way, and it wasn't the school of hard knocks. Sometimes it was just go, Richard, go.
Yeah.
And that's all I needed that day to be the best.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how this continues to show up and repeat itself in your story here in a moment. But I also...
We're starting strong,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, because what I also want to acknowledge is that, you know, the focus of your descriptions so far have really been on others and, you know, possibility for others, empowering others, lifting others up. So it sounds like there's definitely, you know, a theme in there of being focused on what you can do for other people as well.
Of course.
Richard, before we get into the five questions here in a minute and we start to unpack your story, one of the things I like to do with every guest is, as you think ahead to the next 40 minutes or so that we'll be talking and the story that you're going to be sharing with us, what would be your intention for yourself for our time together?
Well, that you and I become better friends, that I'm entertaining, and I can crack that 30-minute mark where I'm interesting enough that you want to keep talking with me. Mm-hmm. That's my goal. I said this prior to the podcast going live. I don't have a book nor a seminar, and most people don't like telemarketers. So what I'm trying to do today is just, as I say, I love your podcast. The fact that I'm a guest is awesome. I'm having a great time. So, I mean, this is pretty much my goal at the end of my business day.
Nice. Well, my intention is to support you in your intention, which, you know, we're going to be doing that by creating a space for you to share your story with us today. And my intention also is that, as it is with every guest in every episode, is that there will be people out there who hear your story and they'll see a little bit of themselves in you and what you're sharing. And it'll help them feel a little bit more connected, maybe a little less alone, and in the best of cases, feel inspired and even empowered to go out and do something that they've been wanting to do. So,
well, I hope so. I like fighters that go into the ring wanting to go the distance. It's not like Mike Tyson one round knockouts. Most fighters have to go until the bell. And so I just want someone to have endurance. I want longevity. They need to be able to keep moving forward. And that's what I've seen through these years. Setbacks are kind of funny to me now that I'm more mature and have impulse control. It's not like I want my house to burn down. But if there's a day where there's not a single problem, it's not a good day. You need to find things to fix or to improve. And if you're really attentive and in the now and seeing what's going on around you, you might even have some preventative measures. And so it's kind of a game. You know, I don't laugh at life, but I don't take it so seriously either. And I don't want to be so hard on myself. I've been very fortunate to where I am today. This The stars were aligned. In fact, when I get into my story, and this is what's going to relate to the majority of your audience, it's getting past parents' guilt. It's sometimes making selfish decisions. It's doing things where you can live with yourself and knowing that you are going to be the best that you can be. And so a lot of people are forced into a box, either through religious practices, traditions, cultures, who they marry, what they study, what they do with their lives. And it's comfortable for some, but forced for others. And so for me, I always tried to make the best argument for my case. But listen, Paul, there's a lot of negative Nancys, Debbie Downers, and pessimistic people out there that are fearful or envious or just don't want you to succeed. And so what do you do in your life? You get rid of toxic people. You gravitate towards those that are positive. But the main thing, my brother, sometimes you got to walk alone. You got to do that forced march by yourself, because no one's going to do it with you. And if you do the sort of dedicated practice and preparation prior to it, chances are you'll have your momentum. The odds will be in your favor. And I'll get to that as well, because this just wasn't on a spur of the moment. This was the kind of thing that I was leading up to my entire life. And once I was given that one in a million opportunity, my goodness gracious, I just held on for the ride. And this is why we're here today.
Well, it's a great setup. I mean, let's jump into it. Let's start with the first question. And the first question, Richard, is where in your life have you found yourself sitting on a comma?
Oh, easily. When I was in private school, right before middle school, I went to a place called Germantown Academy in Fort Washington, a very beautiful elite private school that my father and brother graduated. And I was expected to graduate there, go to Washington and Lee University, and then maybe either Columbia Business or Harvard Law, like my family. And I didn't like that school very much. I mean, it was a beautiful education, but, you know, the classes were small. It was about 60 students. Everyone lived yonder, so it's not everyone in your neighborhood. And I did not fit in at all. It's not like I was a dreamer, but I just didn't go into lockstep. And I also didn't get the support that I wanted from certain directors and principals of the school, that at such a delicate age, when you're 13 years old, you can make or break a child. And now that I'm 52 years old, looking back at some of the comments that were made, or the fact that people gave up on me very quickly during my seventh grade year, because I was, parents were getting divorced, having a weird year, chasing girls. I mean, you know, you're distracted, but it's not the point. Someone needs to get you refocused and balanced. And they did not do that. And so guess what? Almost like a wolf that needs to gnaw off his arm to get out of that trap. I had to fail out of there in order to get out of that school. If not, my parents would have never let me go. So I had to take the hit, have that reputation where people didn't want me to play with their kids anymore because I was a quote unquote bad kid. Okay, so be it. So then how do you see yourself? You see yourself as being the example of what not to be. So I'm on this comma. Now, I could have taken the easy route and done some serious drugs and broke more windows and gotten into fist fights and failed out of more schools, right? And be that bad kid in boys' town, you know, biting on a toothpick and trying to find fights. And I just didn't want to do that. So I turned it around, and when I went to Abington High School, I went from 60 kids to 500 kids in my class. Everyone grew up together. They're all in the neighborhood. And so I finally got my act together, and I saw people that I admired that were my age, because I had to size myself up in athletics and academics and socially. And not only did I gravitate towards that, but obviously the soil and the sun helped me grow. I mean, you become a tri-letterman, you're active in outside classroom activities. In fact, my dedicated Spanish teacher was so interested in me, Doña Esperanza Galchet, that she said, hey, Richie, why don't you be a Spanish major in college? I mean, you're doing great in my class. You're really the only one that's studying. And I see that you really love this. I'll write you a college recommendation letter. I said, you got to be kidding. And I also got one from the late principal, Norman Schmidt. And I was not a good student. It was just, I was so loyal to my school, and I really tried to raise money and do things. And so they got me into the University of Arizona so I could be a Spanish major. Now, I had to convince my family this. This was a huge comma for me. They said, Richard, you need to do this. And I said, wait a second. My great-grandparents came from Eastern Europe at the turn of the 20th. Great-grandpa couldn't even speak English. We made our money during the Depression. Just skip two generations. Why would you take a fire out of somebody? You see that I'm doing above and beyond school. Just because you can't speak Spanish doesn't mean that I can't earn a living from it. I can be versatile. Mm. None of my friends can do it. I can read contracts, speak to a doctor and attorney, and get out of a burning building if I can read the instructions. And so to me, I felt the butterflies. You know, it's like a Christmas Eve feeling. You know, anticipation is the greatest drug. I'll stare at my hamburger a minute before taking a bite. And so at 18 years old, I knew that this sort of dedicated decision that I was making was going to be a gift that kept on giving the rest of my life. And I had to fight for it. And I did. But not only that, I was also financially responsible. Arizona in-state tuition was nothing compared to other schools. And so, you know, once again. And so that was a huge comma for me. Because when I was 13 years old at Germantown Academy, I'm like, oh my God, where am I going with my life? And then all of a sudden, when I got kicked out and went to Abington, I said, wait a second, I just shed some skin. It's sunny today. I think I have a future.
Yeah.
And it opened my eyes to not making selfish decisions, but I think decisions that were the best for me long term, where Richard would be the happiest, where I would shine. And I know that at the end of the day, Paul, I could look at myself in the mirror, because that's one of the worst things you could do, is to not respect yourself enough to make a bed, hit the gym, eat well, or even look at yourself or love yourself. And it's not that I didn't love myself during that year. I was told not to love myself. And I'm not going to use profanity, but you know what I was going to say to those people now. Not cool. Not cool at all.
Right.
And so, thinking that way at such a young age, looking back at it now, I am exceptionally proud of myself for being bold and brave and putting my foot down and having, you know, a strong back, because I knew I was going to be carrying a lot of weight. And so that, my friend, was undoubtedly one of the biggest crossroads of my entire life. And when I was feeling the lowest and the most vulnerable is when I felt incredibly powerful, because I know, listen, it can't get any worse. I'm already in big trouble. I might as well lay it out there and see what happens. And thankfully, I did the right things and made the right decisions, but it took a while. It wasn't like a light switch where it just flicks. You have to get out of bed. You got to start having first downs compared to touchdowns. You need to move slowly again after you've been beat up, so you can not fall into the same traps a second time.
I'd love to jump in on this for a moment, if I may, and just kind of reflect some things back to you. Again, correct me where I'm off base on any of these things, but and we're going to continue with the second question, which is going to give you a chance to go even deeper for us. But I just have to acknowledge, like, we get a lot of stories on here about folks. What I'm kind of hearing is this whole, like, defying others' expectations in order to find what's true and right for oneself, right? And so this, one hand, it's like, oh, this kind of fits in that category, but there's no such thing as categories when it comes to all of these really personal stories. But I'm getting something myself from your story that's even your own unique, you know, experience with this, which is, you know, growing up in the expectations of a family, this is how we do things, this is how you'll do things, being able to recognize that it doesn't fit for you, even though you kind of had to wear it uncomfortably for a while, and then eventually finding your own way, as you described, finding the place that fits so much that you feel it within your body, you felt giddy and excited. But I've never had anybody describe failing their way to fail out to get out, or failing their way to freedom was kind of the words that came up in my mind. There was some intentionality in that, it seems.
It's equivalent to a burn in the gym. You got to do those extra 3 or 4 reps to get the burn. That's where you grow the muscle. You're tired at the end of the day because you put in a full day. So I don't know. It's the kind of thing, you know, when it really hit me, when I started improving in my grammar, and advancing my vocabulary, because Spanish is a, all the world's a stage. It's a luxury that I have. It's not just I can go grab an instrument, I need Wi-Fi, electricity, and have to go somewhere for a seminar. No, all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And so when I was with my parents and we were at a Mexican restaurant or on vacation, and they saw me speak Spanish, and it's not what they saw, because they thought it was a cute parlor trick and would tap me on the head and think it was cute. But now, when I was speaking to the Latinos, and they gave me such incredible, positive reinforcement that was outside of my family's bubble. So that was a huge reality check to me, that it's like the game Marco Polo. I was getting warmer. I'm getting closer to the goal. And I could say, listen, man, every time I could speak a little longer, my vocabulary is expansive. They would give me additional vocabulary, adjust my grammar, but then just look at me and say, Richard Blank, good for you. Good boy. And to get that sort of feeling constantly, I said, this is the greatest in the world. I don't want it to stop. And so they didn't realize what they were about to experience with me. They should have seen the signs, but they didn't. They just thought it was like a passing phase, like an earring, or if you wore, you know, like Rush t-shirt.
I'd love to self-reference for just a moment, because you're really striking something that resonates with me, which is the whole, when you find the thing, you might have a tendency, even though it doesn't feel like it, you might be a little bit more patient with yourself while you learn the thing, right? Because so many of us, and you've alluded to this already, right? So often we find a thing that we want, we visualize it, we manifest it, whatever, but we're really, really eager to have it real fast. And learning a new language or developing a new workout routine or trying to get a new body or whatever the case may be is no exception. But generally, the folks who realize that it's a long-term play will be able to find patience still wanting the thing. And so, for example, estoy aprendiendo español ahora.
Hey, qué bueno.
Pero no es bueno. But I'm learning Spanish right now. And it was like, I was so eager to learn and so in a hurry that the most important thing that finally happened was I got so frustrated that I realized it's like, I'm not trying to learn Spanish to go on vacation at the end of the year. Like, I literally want to learn Spanish. And that means now I'm going to have to think about this very long term, and very slow and steady wins the race and consistency. And I think that's what I'm hearing you describe, is you found this thing that you love. There's something much deeper there. And you were already sharing with us, there's this like different way you go about it than just jumping in and trying to grab as much as you can all at once.
Impossible. It's impossible. And that's why, if I may make a suggestion, and your Spanish is excellent, by the way. Que bueno estás hablando español.
Ah, gracias.
If I sat down and studied grammar, that would drive me crazy, but I needed to do it for 6 months to at least have a foundation of grammar. But it's boring. What did Richard do? Richard loved watching movies in Spanish with the Spanish underneath it. So I could read along. And also phonetically, I had to work my ear, because most of the time it's not silence. There's noise in the background where you don't understand the pronunciation or certain accents. Secondly, I chose an intercambio. I went on a ton of dates in Spanish. You know how smooth you are in Spanish? No matter what you talk about. And so I was getting, in a sense, a beautiful evening, but also 3, 4, 5 hours worth of Spanish. And so there's a certain point where your mind gets used to it. After a glass of wine or in a certain mood, you speak better. But then again, you really, like in the gym with muscles and learning art, you do see improvements. And it's not a one and a done. These are things that if you have it, you store it and you can continue to use it like pennies in a jar. And even though my grammar was not perfect, I could still do about 70%. I knew enough vocabulary where I could speak like a caveman and make my point. Or you're so lucid in the moment that you're watching illustrators and nonverbal communication. Or if you don't get it, you put 4 and 4 together, and the thing that they're talking about on the table is the word you didn't know. And so what a way to be engaged. What a way to listen. And so most people are physically there, but mentally somewhere else. But when you are translating, you are forcing yourself to be in the now. And it was Renaissance for me. I mean, I love art and I love passion. And the fact that Spanish is a romantic language because it's one of the few that talk about desire and doubt with the subjunctive tense. And so when people were talking, it was so expressive. I don't know. I was caught up in it. I thought it was amazing. Most of my friends hated taking languages, which if you think about it like this, that's the road less traveled. Mm-hmm. That's the cave that's got all the gold. And I don't like chum in the water. I don't like everyone competing for things. Let me be unique in a certain way. But how about this? When you meet someone that speaks Spanish and I start like you do speaking Spanish, look at that first impression. You know the dedication and the structure and the cognitive skills. Plus, you're showing such respect to somebody else. I'm crushing it, crushing it when it comes to first impressions, especially post-grad. When I was getting jobs, I could put Se Habla Español on my business card. But in regards to sales, I was going to Southwest Phoenix and just crushing the sales when people were competing in Scottsdale. And they weren't able to get the domestic market. And so as to me, it just was natural. It's Wu Wei, Paul. There's no resistance. It's wind, it's current, and it's gravity. I don't have to pedal bikes or row. It's doing it for me. And so to me, I didn't say life was easy, but my goodness gracious, I gave myself more than enough velocity momentum to give myself distance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, and your experience, you know, with Spanish and this thing that lit you up and that you then immersed yourself in and pursued and as you said, like got really, really present with. Yeah. Can also be a metaphor, right? Like for folks who are listening, it doesn't just have to be Spanish and working out, right? It's when you bring the thing that you want into your everyday. So whether that's, I really want to start a new business or whether I really want to, you know, learn a new craft or a hobby or, you know, an art or relationships, or it's kind of anything. Like if you have a vision for it, you have a passion for it, all of these things that you're describing about your experience with Spanish and the Spanish language, those same principles can apply. That bringing it into your everyday, doing it a little bit every day, finding different ways to incorporate it, you know, changing your view and your relationship with it. And then you just suddenly discover one day, oh my gosh, all the work and all the investment, it's actually here now. Like I've been so focused on when am I gonna that I actually am now. Is that a fair?
Yes, but remember, tomorrow we shall die. So if today you only know 5 vocabulary words, let's raise our drinks and dance to that. I'm at the sort of point, I don't like, as you say, waiting for what's to happen. I'm very content with today. And now I did mention working out and exercise. Well, that's just who I am. I grew up hitting the gym and I like being in shape, but I also need a release. Damn it. I just can't wash cars and play pinball. I need that sort of thing to get, let's just say, stress out and bring in power and confidence.
And plus, something that challenges you, I believe I'm hearing you say, right? Something that's
individual challenges. Yeah. Yes, of course. And a lot of the stuff I'm mentioning are individual efforts. It's, you know, if you and I got to play rock and roll together, the band's got a show. But mostly what I am mentioning are things you do not need somebody, so you do not need an excuse. And also remove the weight of the naysayer. Because just because Billy's not going to dinner doesn't mean you can't. Just because none of my friends speak Spanish, none of them. None of them. That doesn't mean that I can't. They're all attorneys and doctors and in finance on Wall Street. And I'm so exceptionally proud of them. Yeah, but I can talk to Ricardo Montalban, you know, and they can't. And so at the end of the day, gold and jewels lose its luster and money is great, but anybody can get money. It's just when somebody does something above and beyond in regard. And I love musicians. Because you might see the concert, but Paul, what about the 100 hours that they put in prior to that? I think of the Wizard of Oz, what's behind the curtain, what's in the kitchen. I want to know what got you there on those rainy Wednesday mornings. You don't want to get out of bed, or it's the late night, or the client that yells at you, or nice. It's, you know what it is to me too. I always believe that when there's no surprises, Paul, good, bad, or ugly, I will call you. I'll let you know Joey quit, but I also have a solution. Okay. I'm in a call center industry. There's attrition. And in the beginning, I was a little hesitant for it. I always did it, but you got certain flinching reactions. Now, I don't want it to happen, but if I have a solution, I love making that call. Why? They can judge me during chaos, which I show strong character. I got a solution. And if you can build a foundation during tough times, my man, look what happens during good times. Mm-hmm. And most clients would say, I love how you handled this, Richard. I feel more comfortable with you. Thank you for being a straight shooter. Mm. It's the only way to play.
Yeah.
And I mentioned the word maturity earlier. That's what you learn when you get older. If you're going to be a CEO of a company or a leader, you will have to make that call that no one else wants to make or have that conversation, or just be that first individual to stand up and do. Mm-hmm. Because as I say, you get 99 years here. What do you want to do with that time? And when you look back at it, the worst thing to do is to regret not doing something. I'd rather have someone turn me down for a dance than me never asking someone to dance. What a waste. What a waste of life.
I love this. Let me ask you the second question, because I think it's going to give you an opportunity to kind of take us in another place too. But also you can go back and forth, obviously, as you continue to flesh out your story. But the second question is, as you look back at the comma that you were sitting on, what did this create for you? It feels like you've already kind of shared some of that, but what would you add? What did sitting on this comma create for you?
Well, I'm going to give you Spanish. Basta ya. Enough already. Enough already. I don't like this anymore. I was being pulled in so many directions and it just didn't feel good. And so, as I mentioned before, I'm not going to be such a rebel maverick where I'm going to quit school and try to do something. No, I didn't do that. Mm. And I know that when you're young, your parents give you certain directions because you're young. You don't know any better. But there needed to be a blending. There needed to be something where, you know, children should be seen and not heard. I say quite the contrary. These are very intelligent children. And maybe sometimes you should speak to them as an adult so they can learn and grow faster. Don't put me in a bubble. Don't protect me so much, because then someone is not prepared for life. And so I had to make some very, very big decisions at such a young age. Was I afraid? No. As I told you before, it's Papillon getting off a devil's island. It was liberating. I realized I was going to die with my boots on, and I knew I was going to do that for the rest of my life. And as long as I wasn't offending somebody and I was trying to be the best that I could be, hopefully people would understand my mission. But it was weird, man. I mean, I would see my friends that had certain directions and better grades and certain sort of structure. And okay, sure, maybe they're beating me a little bit in the race, but eventually, like the tortoise and the hare, I caught up. Not only did I catch up, but I was consistent. Mm-hmm. And I was very methodical because I didn't want to fall into any more traps. So obviously, you know, the greatest thing ever, it's almost like a telemarketer. They say you always get that one person that says F you. I hope it's the first call. Because then it's not anymore. I'd rather have the tough part early on so I can get it over with. Because like public speaking, be the first speaker. Don't wait until the end because you're freaking out all day. And so for me, having to go through certain things at such a young age, it made me resilient. Mm. It really did. It gave me backbone. And I had to make that choice of either believing myself or hating myself. And I decided to love myself and to be very, very true to myself, regardless of the outcome. And, you know, when you look at that ocean and you don't see land, you get scared. But if you get your boat and you go there, then you become, you know, Marco Polo or Christopher Columbus, and you're in the history books. And you're there. And so I don't know, my man, I always wanted to leave a castle to slay a dragon. I really, really wanted a fun, adventurous life. And I know that by speaking second languages, it would make it much easier for me, like James Bond, where I could go to another country and fit in quickly, or if someone was talking bad about me, I would know what they say. And so I always felt that these things would just enrich my life and make it easier.
And it also sounds like, as you continue to tell your story and expand on it, like I continue to hear these themes. You really are going your own way because, like, for example, you said something earlier, you were talking about your friends who had all gone a certain way and so forth. And a lot of people talk about the experience. I've certainly had it, the comparison trap where it's like, you know, how do I measure up against them? And yet the same example, the same situation, you're seeing it, you're kind of asking yourself, but you're kind of okay with it because you're definitely like, charting your own course, you're going your own direction. It seems like, obviously, in the telling of the story, you're simplifying it, but I'm sure in the living of the experience, there were a lot of challenges. And so it sounds like despite those challenges, there was always a pull. There was always a pull in a different direction, your own direction.
Absolutely. All my friends have a lot more money than me, but they're miserable. That Saturday golf game, they just hate. They hate that Lexus. They hate the privates. You know what they say to me privately? It's not like they don't want to do my exact adventure, but they all tell me at the reunions or when we speak, Richard, I wish that I did, or I wish that I tried. You know, I got a great life. Everything's in place. But once again, it was a, you know what it was? A plug and play. Yeah, plug and play life. It's great in the beginning. I mean, it's comfy, but then after a while you start looking out the window and you see other people doing things and it concerns you because you not like you feel like you're missing out, just that you might be wasting time.
Yeah. Well, that's a great springboard into the second or the third question, I should say, third actually. Yeah. And that is, you know, what did you learn about yourself as a result of sitting on this comma? Or what are you learning?
Well, a lot of it was my own mistakes. I really didn't have the structure in regards to academics. And at that year, I failed out because I wanted to get out, but I also failed out because I just did not study that year at all. And so when I was sitting there knowing that I was going to be leaving the school and seeing the big stack of books on my dining room table that Sunday when the clock was running faster than I could imagine before my exams on Monday, I knew I was over my head. And this was maybe the first time in my life I realized I'm going to be in a lot of trouble. And this is not funny or cute, and I can't talk my way out of this. This is serious. You know, when you get into certain years of school, it becomes a lot more difficult, a lot more challenging. And when you leave lower school and go into middle school, you got to start reading more, you know, and do things. And so I used to just get by on the fly. And so I did not like how I felt about myself. I was extremely disappointed that day. And so I said, listen, if I'm going to fail at something, at least let me not give it the college try. But if that's the best I can do, that's the best thing I can do. I was not doing the best I could do that. And I vowed to myself to not ever put myself in that sort of situation again. It was weird. It was long days. And you didn't know how to handle it because you're so young and you don't have a husband or a wife to assist you. A lot of your friends are worrying about their own stuff and your parents are yelling at you. So what do you do in 1985? You don't have the internet to go look up things and, you know, you're kind of stuck. So being on that comma, let's say the comma was a hot plate, you know, it was starting to burn the butt. So I just wanted to get up and do something with my life. I just don't want to burn, like the frog in the hot water sort of thing. And it's just, but as I mentioned before, I grew up really, really fast during those years. I think I lost a portion of my innocence. But then again, what I lost, I also gained because I grew up and I realized what I wanted to do in life.
And I'm also hearing this clear sense, like you said, you didn't know what you wanted, but you had a pretty clear sense of what you didn't want. And sometimes that's where it starts.
Yeah. How do you know what you want when you're 12?
Yeah.
I wanted to be a fireman like a year before that. And after that, I wanted to be the face man from the A-team. I mean, what do you want to be? You don't know. But what I don't like is being forced to do something that, I mean, if your parents say you got to clean the house or go somewhere, do it. But I didn't want the long-term forcing. It seemed like not a forced march. It seemed like a death march. I just saw myself in the future sitting in some cubicle somewhere. And it's almost like the Talking Heads song, Once in a Lifetime. You just ask yourself, how in God's name did I get here? How did I get here? And I almost saw the future and it didn't look bright. And so, as I say, you just don't know what to do at that age, except sometimes you go on your intuition, or maybe my past life was assisting me in this life and telling you what to do. But I tell you what, I definitely didn't want to be a CEO of a call center at those years. I had no idea what a call center was even existed. There was no blueprint to it. And so, as I say, during certain stages of your life in your 20s or 30s, you are given opportunities and you might see things differently, or It might be the right time. You know, it's interesting, Paul. I started my business in my mid-30s. I wasn't a young whippersnapper early 20s. And, mm-hmm. and even in my late 20s, when I came to Costa Rica, I wasn't still prepared. And I was I'm still immature. I just got lucky. But what happens is that when you get to certain stages, you do compare yourself. And when I was in college, I sized myself up with individuals that knew how to cook, knew how to do their laundry and iron, knew how to keep a bathroom clean. And so I said, wait a second, these people got their game going. I don't even know how to cook yet. And so when I see the peers that I love doing certain things, and if they can do it, I can do it. And I can't put the blame on my parents or anybody else for not teaching that to me. You need to teach these things yourself. And it comes back to accountability at the end. And for me, I always wanted to be responsible financially, right? Health-wise. Mm-hmm. But mentally, Paul, I wanted to be exceptionally responsible, because if you start getting into a depression, then it's like a spider's web. You get wrapped up and you can't get out of it. And that's one of the worst things that somebody can do for themselves. It makes you extremely clouded. You make terrible decisions. Your timing is off. And then people start hating you because you're miserable all the time. And so I was really trying to avoid those sort of things as well, because I'd be a shell of myself. I wouldn't be on your podcast. I wouldn't be in a suit smiling and telling fun stories. I would no more be on your podcast to tell you about working in my family's business and being miserable in Philadelphia. You wouldn't even want me on your show, because guess what, buddy? I'm still on the comma. Maybe it's a semicolon because you got a dot on top of it. Even worse. And so, you know, that's where I'm at, buddy. And so what an interesting show you have. You get people to disclose something that either A, they're embarrassed about, they're not willing to admit. I'm willing to admit anything, because it's healthy for you. You get it out. And Paul, you're a good dude. I mean, it's very easy to speak with you because you're empathetic towards this. But you know, there are some people that will use this to their advantage to hurt you or to twist the knife on a bad day. And so I have to be, even though your audience is thousands, I got to be exceptionally selective, let's say locally, with whom I discuss things. But I don't mind sharing this with your audience. I'm a true cat. And hopefully, even though I'm a telemarketer and run a call center, maybe some of my earlier years of development is something that people can relate to, in a sense.
Well, and that's the whole thing, right? I mean, the whole point of having these conversations is very much what you said, right? Like, first of all, there's the unburdening aspect of it for the storyteller themselves, you today. And then there's the normalizing of being able to talk about what it's like to feel stuck and to get unstuck. And then we're also, you know, I'm hoping that we're modeling what it's like to listen to people and let people have their story without needing to do something about it or fix it for them. I mean, all these things are important. So I appreciate you acknowledging that. And I want to ask this fourth question, because I think you seem like, in everything that you've shared, very optimistic and aspirational person. And so the fourth question is, what has changed for you as a result of sitting on this comma? Because I'm really curious to see, and what was the outcome of all of these things that you've so bravely shared with us?
I guess my destiny. There's no way I would have gotten here if I didn't start what I did back in the day. Not a chance. Married the girl of my dreams, even the company. And so this seed that I had planted back in 85, look at it now. And also, when certain opportunities were given to me, I was ready. My goodness, post-grad, my job's in Spanish. I worked for the importers of Corona. I got that job in a heartbeat. And then at 27 years old, a buddy of mine said, Richie, come to Costa Rica for a couple months and teach English in my calls. Well, I came down. 2 months turned into 4 years. I wanted to stay. I learned the business from the inside out, put all of my stuff in storage, just sent it down a couple of years ago. But I saw it and I got excited for it. And I saw individuals in Costa Rica making these bilingual phone calls, converting calls. You know, they were upselling, and it was amazing. And it was young. Everyone was in their mid-20s. You know, it was like college. Everyone was fun. And I also knew this, that at 27, you know, you got Janice and Jimmy and Jim and Kurt Cobain and Amy Winehouse. That's an interesting year, 27 years old. And so for me, it was the same thing as, you know, live or die. And when I was there, I said, Richard Blank, if you do not take advantage of this, you will regret this for the rest of your life. Yeah, but your parents want you to come back, start working in the real estate company. Okay, well, guess what? I'm already here. I'm not leaving. And my friend wanted me to stay, and I was making enough money to live very well here. Why would I let it go?
Yeah.
And as I mentioned, that was like my graduate school. I learned the call center industry minus C level. I learned retention, onboarding, customer support and sales, human resources and training. I would have never gotten that anywhere if my buddy didn't give me that experience. And then I parlayed that into finally starting my company back in 2008. And so my good friends listening to this podcast, please, if you see a job that might pay you a dollar less, but you get tons of experience in the future, you're going to make that money back tenfold. That was the greatest investment I ever made, was working at my friend's call center.
And I think there's also something else to acknowledge here. You tell me if I'm wrong, Richard, but like I'm sitting here kind of, I'm constantly mentally looking at the arc of your story. And I'm like, I think what it feels like for me, or at least what I'm going to take from it is there's also this element of trusting your gut, because all the way back at 12, 13, you know, in your school years and beyond, when you were like, I don't want this, but I am interested in that. And the more I walked into that, the more excited I got. Like there was this gut thing guiding you, and you trusted that. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't have predicted then, you said it yourself, you couldn't have predicted you'd end up owning a call center in Costa Rica.
No.
But you trusted your gut. And in trusting your gut, that ultimately led you along the path. Like it probably did feel like surprises along the way, right? Like, oh, I get this call out of the blue, come down and help me teach English and so forth. But that wouldn't have happened had you not trusted your gut in the beginning. And then you were trusting your gut all along the way. So not to go out there and say that everybody's intuitive and everybody should always listen to their gut. Like if you get a gut feeling, I definitely believe in listening to that. But I mean, is that a fair summarizing of your arc?
Let me combo the gut with the sign. I also got signs. Like, as I mentioned, the positive reinforcement, or the fact that Spanish became easier for me, the job opportunities, the fact that none of my friends could do it, which made me unique. Looking back at it, oh, there were crystal clear signs that were right in front of me, like a neon light, like an old school marquee. And did I see it then? No, but it's almost like the bat that can fly without sight. Just because I couldn't see, my other senses kicked in big time. And so everything, as I mentioned before, it's almost like Popeye spinach. Every time I was speaking Spanish, met a Latino, tried to interact, the sort of euphoria. So I said, dude, you need to continue doing this. It's not like painting seashells by the seashore. Or the super, super, super long shot. I didn't say that. But I do know that learning a second language, it works. And there's a ton of people around that can do it too. And so, and also it was going to get my parents off my back in case I needed to get a job or something. But no.
Well, there's a lot of things you could have done, though. I mean, you're just continuing to reinforce the point for me, right? There's a lot of things you could have done to keep your parents off your back, but you were going with the thing that you saw the signs.
Man, you should have seen these job interviews I was going in post-grad. I was getting offers on each one, but then I didn't want to work there because the office looked miserable. But I remember this. Okay, so it's, what, the fall of 96? And I'm going into these job interviews in Scottsdale and Phoenix. And this is before people had their cell phones. So most of these businessmen in their suits would be reading the Wall Street Journal or just sitting there doing something. I was sitting looking around. And then I would go into my interview and they'd ask me to sit down and I'd say, okay. And then after a minute, I go, hey, Paul, do you mind if I stand for a minute? They're like, stand? Yeah, because I want to move around a little bit. Why am I moving around? Because if I'm looking at you, I'm not looking what's behind me. What do you mean? Just like you said earlier, I would stand up, I'd walk around the room. Yeah, I'd see the golf trophy. I'd see you and your kids in Mexico. I know that you love your cat. But most people, if they're back to that, they'd never see it. And so it was a great chance for me to anchor with the people. We're laughing, having a great time. And then I would walk out of the room. These six guys sitting in the reception, or I'd look at each one of them, do the wink and the fake gunshot. I'd go, good luck, boys. Try to beat that. And really ice them out. Because there's no way they're going to have that sort of meeting with these people. And I would always get these job offers. And in a good way, I would say it wasn't the right environment for me. You know, I would definitely get back in touch. Why? Because I need that synergy. I just can't be the only candle in the darkness. I mean, I'd like to be productive, but if I look around a room and I see people miserable, or you could feel it in the air, you know, that would suck the life out of you. And, you know, of course they want a Division I starting quarterback, but man, I can't hit the ball and carry your office. It just doesn't work that way. I could see that it wasn't the right fit. And then when I found an environment where I saw people chipper and spring in their step and proactive, then I realized that I'm meeting people equal or even better than me, which is going to get me to a different level. And so that's why I chose certain jobs as well, not through desperation. I had the leverage. They definitely wanted to hire me. And so I walked in with that, knowing that I could contribute, that I would be an asset to this environment. And I'm not going to kiss anyone's butt. That's the worst thing to ever do. And it doesn't last. And you lose the respect of your coworkers on things like that. I always believed in merit. It might take me a little bit longer to get my metrics where they need to be. But once I catch my groove, I'm going to probably be one of the top salespeople in your office. Not because I'm bilingual, because of the consistency. I'm the golden boy. I'm guaranteed. I will show up at the office early. I'm not going to necessarily stay late unless I'm on a phone call or closing a deal. But I tell you what, being an owner of a company, and when I show up sometimes early in the morning for certain meetings, and I see a kid that's a half an hour before his shift, or the ones, that's Mr. Reliable. That's my boy. And he didn't know I was showing up today, but this is a soldier that showed up at the ready, at the ready. And so when it comes to me to have to choose a supervisor or a promotion, I'm not doing on someone that's been with me for 10 years, or I go on the one that the other individuals will respect. Not me, them. That's the most important. And I'll ask around what they think about the top dog. And listen, if you remember Dennis Rodman, I have some people here that can rip it up, but they're not the best leaders. Not saying Dennis wasn't. He was a rebound king and the man. But sometimes there are people that you know, shake things up a little bit on a team. Or how about this? Right bus, right seat. The last thing I want to do is pull someone off the phone to manage people and make them miserable with coffee breath compared to having them on the phone, ripping it, making money, and sitting people next to them for shadowing. And for onboarding. And so I know what to do. I know I don't want to squeeze somebody out. And I always ask people's opinions before making a final decision, because I might be off. And so those are the sort of things that have assisted me in making some of the best decisions at the company.
So much more, I'm sure we could learn and take from you. I want to kind of start to bring us to a close. And the fifth question is, Richard, what does getting off the comma look like for you?
I'm going to give you a visual. Sunshine on my face, smile. Or like when grandma's making cookies. Or when you walk into a house in the East Coast and it's freezing outside, but when you walk in, you see the fireplace going. A shiny car after you've washed it. You tell me. Each person needs to, as I mentioned before, release that weight. And thankfully, I did it at a very, very young age. You'll know it when it happens. Oh, and if you're capable of, it's like the image streaming theory, that once you're past 20 minutes of decompressed stimulation, your mind can wander, long walks, long showers, plane car rides. And so for me, it's extremely important to put the phone away and to do something. So where in about a half an hour, things become crystal clear. And I know where my priorities are. And I know when I've overextended myself or I haven't done enough. And so I think this comma is a very, very personal thing for somebody. Do not sell your soul for a golden fiddle. It's just not worth it. Mm. And so this comma for you should be the introduction of your story. It's not the body nor the conclusion, but it really should be that opening chapter, that opening line in a book to capture your attention. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't mislead. It shouldn't be deceitful. As I say before, my friend, if you're not honest with yourself, you'll never get off that comma. You might pretend like you are, but you know you're not there. And so I just don't want your audience to be hard on themselves. There are some major financial responsibilities out there. You have your family. There are certain expectations. You have limitations where you live. I don't know how this happened. Paul, this was a long shot. I'm a one in a million Northeast Philly boy that did this. I haven't met many people like myself here. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on. And so, as I say before, you can take certain paths if it's right for you. But me, I had to create my own. And that's okay. And I was prepared to lose, because if I lost, guess what could happen? I could always go home. Mommy and daddy are always there working with my big brother, selling real estate, comfy, comfy job, ready to go. And that's great, but that's not living. That's like a microwave meal. Mm. You know, you want something that's home cooked. You want a painting, not a print. You really want to live life. Because if you don't, you'll be 52-year-old, bald, pissed off dude. Me, I'm 52, bald and happy.
Yeah.
So there's the chance you got to take.
Well, I just have to acknowledge like the zest and the enthusiasm. And then, of course, you know, you continuing just to like go my own way, like blaze my own path. Richard, so much more that folks could take from you. As we close this out, why don't you share with us, where can people find you? I'll put all your links in the show notes so people can go there and click on them. But where are you at in case somebody wanted to see what you're up to or maybe reach out to you?
Well, first, I can't thank you enough. I had the best time being a guest on your podcast today. Paul, you did killer interviews. You're a really great guy. I suggest that your audience buy a ticket and come visit me in Central America. Mm. Real quick for your audience. We are north of Panama, south of Nicaragua. Costa Rica is the only democratic society in Central America. So there's no standing army here. They put all that money into education, have a 95% literacy rate. I mentioned Amazon, HP, Intel, and Oracle are here. We're known for ecotourism, medical tourism, and it's just, it's a good life. But yeah, if they want to go to my website, CostaRicasCallCenter.com, shoot me an email, CEO@CostaRicasCallCenter.com. If they want to share with me a script, some rebuttals, bounce some ideas, I'm not going to cold call close you to work with me. That's what we do. But I'll definitely hook your audience up if they want to run some ideas by me. I'll work with them on some scripts and prospecting on how to get more business.
Nice.
But this was fun today. Okay. This is extremely therapeutic. I hope I sorry about bitching about my childhood. You know,
that's part of the story. That's part of the story. Well, your story's not over yet. So we do one other thing here, Richard, which, you know, obviously having all of you on here sharing about your experiences, you know, this is all about us respecting each other's story and kind of taking things that resonate from each other. And your story wouldn't be complete and this podcast wouldn't be complete if we didn't also give you an opportunity to lift up others, because that's what this is all about. And so I call this section Acknowledgements, and it's your opportunity to look into your circle and say, okay, well, who else can I give a voice to or boost or lift up? And often that would be causes or organizations or charities. And sometimes it's other creators or it's important people in your life. So as you look at your own circle today, who would you acknowledge?
One of the things I'm most proud of is my second language scholarship that I do for Abington Senior High School. When my very good buddy, Angelo Berrios, the principal, was there before he got promoted to superintendent of Bucks County, we spoke about that. And I do a scholarship for a graduating senior that wants to study languages at the university level. I'll pay for their books freshman year. Been doing it for 8 years already. And so I love it because the circle's complete. I'm paying it forward. And this is something that's selfless. I don't want anything from it. And I can afford to do it. And it's more than my pleasure. And so that to me is important, is to give it back to those that assisted along the way. Because, you know, success is built on a million thank yous. And one of the earliest thank yous is when I was a zero, I became a hero at Abington. I mean, GA really did not like me. And so they embraced me, especially during the most vulnerable years. And so for me, I'm most appreciative for that. And now a couple other things that we're working on here. You're not going to believe this. I there's a rock star down here, Igni Faroki. It's one of the most famous ones in Costa Rica. He wrote a song for my call center called Shine Like the Sun, with Eduardo Dorian, the lead singer, and Harold Salas, who is the, Harold Webb, excuse me, who is the bass player. But check this out. I hired Gary Beers, the bassist of In Excess, to play on this song with us. And so I did a collaboration with my favorite band. And so that was pretty cool. And then I'm finally working on a rap dance video here where, you know, it's amazing, this freestyle dancing that they do, especially in the Olympics. And so a couple of my call center agents do that dancing. One of them's a rapper that moved from New York. And so we're just going to create something here as well. We're going to do like a call center rap, where it's going to give people almost a blueprint on how to make a good phone call. I guarantee this, not a single rapper has done that yet. It's always about like women, wine, and cars, not making telemarketing calls. So I think I might have something here. And so
Once again, going your own way.
Yeah, so I appreciate the arts. So if I can support local rock bands, dancers, rappers, anything here, it's my pleasure. And so, yeah, I try to get myself involved in certain things.
Nice. Well, thank you for those acknowledgments and for lifting those voices up. And with that, we're going to bring it to a close. Richard, again, thank you so much for sharing your story and your experience with us here this episode. And I wish you the best week ahead and a wonderful kind of end to the year down there in Costa Rica.
Yeah, have a good Halloween. They really don't celebrate it down here. So
Dia de los Muertos, no?
More or less, yeah.
All right. Well, have a great one, and we will follow your story with interest moving forward.
Thank you, Paul. Que tenga buen día.
What an honor it is for me to witness these powerful stories. I hope you feel the same way too. Think about what you learned from this conversation. What stood out for you? What challenged you? What inspired you? And I encourage you to write it down in some form of journaling and reflection. Surprises can reveal themselves to you when you do this. And if you were moved by today's conversation, pass it along to someone you care about. Let's spread the word. Let's continue to build connection. And if you do discover something you'd like to unpack further, book a call with me and let's talk about it. My links are in the show notes. Be sure to like this episode, follow the podcast here on this platform and social media at Off the Comma, and feel free to comment and interact with these posts and episodes. Check out my website for workshops, events, and my sponsor community. I'm covering the costs of production by curating my own sponsors who align with our vision. Be sure to check them out. They're all powerful people and businesses. Thank you for listening to this episode of Off the Comma. As always, keep noticing and keep listening.